So as I alluded, we're entering into a study up to Easter of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is an interesting little word I discovered. You know, in the Hebrew, most of the, all the books are named after the first either word or couple words of its title. Of the actual book, but Deuteronomy is not like that because it's actually as it means then the Greek the second law. It actually that only is found later into the middle of the book. If you had the first couple words of the book as its title, it would just be the Book of Words, or the Word of Words. So it's one that we only get as its title because that's the way the Greek translation of it put it. But they actually, those who translated the Old Testament into Greek back in the, what was it, 200s, something B.C., before Christ, they saw that really it's a repetition of the law as it was given in the first three books, especially in Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers. And so there's a rightfulness to call it Deuteronomy. I'm wanting to look at Deuteronomy because as a summary of the whole of the law that was given in those three former books, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, it kind of gives us an overview of the law. And then in particular, it, I think, will lead us into understanding why the cross. Have a greater appreciation for why we needed Jesus. Why did God send his son? You know, we still have, I notice up here, the nativity scene. Why did God send his only begotten son? The second person of the Trinity. Why did he come in the flesh? And moreover, why did he allow himself to be crucified? Deuteronomy will tell us. The law will tell us why. So that's the principal reason why I really want to look at it. Why I want to dwell for a few weeks on Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is really just to introduce the book, a series of three speeches by Moses over the course. The first is from chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 4, verse 43. The second is the longest by far. It's the actual core of the law, and it travels on from verse chapter 4, verse 44, all the way to chapter 29, verse 1. And then there's the shortest of the three speeches is the last, chapter 29, verse 2 to chapter 30, verse 20. And then, of course, there's the ending, which talks about Moses' death. Now, we know Moses didn't write about his own death. That's been added by a scribe or one of his associates, maybe. There's different theories on how it got there. But those last chapters, I think there's two, that talk about his death. Obviously, he didn't write that post-death. So we have the whole of the structure of Deuteronomy is based around these three essential speeches by Moses. The first speech could be thought of as an introduction, where Moses looks at how the faithful people had followed him from all the way from Egypt, you know, where there were the miraculous signs that were done, showing Pharaoh, how did Moses say, let my people go. So the demand was put upon him, and we know, of course, what did it take. The last of the so-called plagues was that of the death of the firstborn of all of them. Even Pharaoh's firstborn was among those who died. And that was a sign from which Passover itself, and Passover is one of the great images of the church for Jesus' death himself, isn't it? I mean, remember, Passover was that time in which the lamb, the Passover lamb, to be spotless, without blemish, was slain, and its blood was put over the doorposts of the homes of the Israelites so that the angel of death would know to pass over that home. And if you think an analogy of who Jesus, his death and the blood that he shed for us, where does that lead us? But directly to the same. His blood in our lives causes the angel of death to pass over us as well. Isn't that a lovely image the Bible gives to us about Jesus, about his the meaning of his death, the Passover? It also speaks about his first speech, the failure of God's people to truly trust in him. I mean, in the beginning of and that's really what I was going to look at before I realized that we were having this baptism today. In the beginning, they send out spies. They're waiting on the far side of the promised land. You know, it was said to be the land of milk and honey that they had been promised. They're waiting there, just about to enter in. And they send out spies to look at the land, to see really how it is and how strong the people are who are already there. Now, of course, they've already put a nail in their foot by doing this, because it's not them who are going to do the fighting, is it? God was going to do the fighting for them. No matter how tall these, what are they called, the Anakites were, no matter how many were the people before them, that's not what counted. What counted was that God was for them. And therefore, as Paul, in fact, quotes in thinking about this, he says, if God is for us, then who can be against us? Not one. And so it is that this is sort of the rhythm of the first of Moses' speeches that's given in Deuteronomy. The second middle speech is the delivery of the law itself. And so it is that it's the longest. The third and the last speech is then Moses leading the people in what is called making actually the covenant of their vows that they made. We had in the first service of this year a brief, an abridged form of the covenant service that was bequeathed to us by Wesley, and even before Wesley by the Puritan church. So that only is an echo that covenant renewal of what we did in the first Sunday is only an echo of what Moses led the people in and making their covenant with God and the third of the speeches. The book as a whole has been called the Gospel of Moses. I think that's a very interesting term, the Gospel of Moses. We don't think of the law often as Christians in our era, at least, as good news. We've been so accustomed to hearing, like for instance, Paul say that if you're still living under the law, then you're not free from the law as Christ has set us free from it. Of course, the problem with that is that, yes, Christ has set us free from the ceremonial law, but that's not all there is to the law, is it? There's both the ceremonial law, which, yes, Christ did nail to the cross, but there's also the moral law. And the moral law still applies. That's something that none of the reformers would have done away with. And unfortunately, in our time, more and more we are hearing that the moral law no longer applies. We've just got to move on, right? It's like, what's that organization, political organization? It's moveon.org. We got to moveon.org because there's nothing in this moral law that can teach us. But that's not at all the truth. The moral law is still instructing us in the church to this day. And so that's why it's so important to dwell upon this section, this book of the Bible. It is the Gospel of Moses, the good news of Moses. You know, people all around that the Israelites at that time, they, listen, this is just one of them. One of the laws that's forbidden in Moses' good news, Moses' gospel, is the sacrifice of children. You know, they, in the pagan company into which they were going, would kill their firstborn child, would offer their firstborn child to the god Baal as a way of showing how sincere was their belief. In fact, there's another god, Molech by name. The Carthaginians also were among those who did this. They had an altar of hands, basically. These arms would receive the child from their family, and the child would roll into flames to be burned to death. They've dug up in Carthage and in others of the cities of the Canaanites of that era. That's who Carthage was settled by, Canaanites. They've dug up little urns, thousands, thousands of urns of children who were burned in the fire just to seek the favor of their god, Molech. Is that what we need to do? Is that what God, our Father, demands of us? No, the law forbids that. And so it is good news that God provides for us. One thing I would like to look at, though, and just skipping ahead from the chapter that I was going to begin with, I want to look at chapter 6 with you. It's been called the first of the creeds. And it goes like this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give to you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. I'll just stop there. Perhaps the one most applicable for us today is as we receive Levi, William, to be baptized.